All right, gentlemen and gentlemen, welcome to the 11th episode of the Threads of Time podcast. Today, I have the honor of speaking with Piggy. I spoke with Piggy back in, I think it was May, and I don't even remember what we talked about, so all this will be new for me as well. One other change that we made for the 11th Threads of Time podcast is you'll see I did not make a song. We actually have intro music from the kind heart of Packer Ken. So you'll be hearing that at the end of our advertisement. And again, we have a great advertiser. It's Sweden. Sweden was kind enough to sponsor the podcast. Sweden wants you to remember that if you're feeling bored, feel free to put on your lederhosen, get in your gondola, and travel up the fjords of beautiful Sweden, where you kiss and drink tea with buxom blondes and Muslim women. I don't know a lot about Sweden. I probably should have gotten more information from the Visitors Bureau before I agreed to let them be a sponsor, but I believe Sweden is where rich people put their money so it can't be found. And the Alps are fresh with the driven snow of the Euphrates. Sweden! And now, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's get to Ken's beautiful bumper music and the sweet, sultry sounds of the Swedish chef himself, Piggy. And now, on with the show.
Attention, everyone!
I do drugs in the Amazon.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
These nuts in your mouth. Okay, and we are back with the Threads of Time podcast. I am super excited to be joined by the very first guest on the CSFBL Circus, which is a name, you know, I picked, just because I have one line that I can say and one circus line I can say, so I just go with it. I'm going to ride it till it's dead. And it is Piggy. Piggy, thank you for doing that show. Thank you for doing this one.
My pleasure.
All right. So, I kind of sprung doing the circus podcast on you last minute. Sorry for doing that, but thanks for jumping in and doing it.
It's all fun.
Yeah. So, one thing that I was going to ask you, we were talking on that podcast a little bit about your franchise, and I forgot to ask you, your franchise name is Piggy Lunk. Where's that name come from?
It's a children's book character. It's the friendly hedgehog, which for some reason I like.
Piggy Lunk is its first and last name? Piggy Lunk. So that's where you got the name Piggy. So is this a book that you read as a child or as an adult?
I don't think I read it as a kid. I saw it as an adult, and it's a great story. It's a friendly hedgehog. He likes to point out that he's a friendly hedgehog, but he's kind of vicious, kind of snarky. And
so you thought maybe it fit you well? It represented you?
I guess I relate
to it. You
know
what? It's like it's your power animal.
Yep.
Like you didn't even need to go to Peru and do ayahuasca. You just got your power animal right out of a book.
Right.
You saved a lot of money and time. Yeah, I think that's a pretty good representation. You know, when I think people get the wrong impression from your name because it's just Piggy. So Piggy doesn't, you know. They associate it with a different animal.
Yep.
It is Piggy, right? I've been saying that for years. I assume it's Piggy.
Well, you can go with that.
What do you go with?
It's Pig.
Oh, Pig. I can't say it right.
No.
So yeah, when I was in Peru, there was, I think I mentioned it to you, there was a guy from Sweden, two guys from Denmark, and we talked quite a bit, and when you just said pig, or however, there's some weird inflection that I'm just not capable of doing when they talk, a certain type of Nordic accent that I just can't master.
Yeah, which is funny. You should have it up there. There are a lot of Nordic people in Wisconsin.
Yeah, especially since I'm half Norwegian and a quarter Danish, so I have three quarters of me is Scandinavian.
Yeah.
Actually, that's pretty common around here in Wisconsin. It's everybody is either Norwegian or German pretty much exclusively. And I think, like we were talking about before the podcast started with the climate, I think that's why is just, you know, they looked on a map and looked at the weather and it seemed like it was similar without as much war and oppression. So similar weather without as much war. So
yeah, I think that's true. There are some great stories about the emigrants that left Sweden and Norway and here and went over there and whenever it was, and I guess they just went, you know, from the East Coast and traveled west until they found a place that sort of felt like home, and then they stuck there.
So, you know, I guess I'm making an assumption on why people left, but why did so many people emigrate from Scandinavia to the colonies?
They were poor farmers, and there were some tough years with, you know, lost crops, and it was a pretty hierarchical society with, you know, just peasants right at the bottom that were frustrated, and they heard that this new country had great riches and good, you know, soil to grow on, and you could just go grab a land and be a free man. So they left. I guess they were pretty desperate, but yeah. You know.
Little did they know what we were going to turn them into over here.
I think it worked out for a lot of them. I believe there are more people of Swedish descent in Minnesota alone than in Sweden. So a large chunk of the population left there.
Yeah, I think that's actually true with Norwegians in Wisconsin as well. And my grandparents on my dad's side were both, they came from Norway, so they were first generation, and they came here to farm, and they found a plot of land that's actually only about 5 miles from where I live right now, and started a family here, ended up having 14 kids, and yeah, it certainly worked out for them. It worked out for me. So, but I was watching a documentary about Norway. And they had a king that was not a very nice guy. Does Sweden have a king still?
Yep.
But not with any power, correct?
No. No power at all anymore. Up until a few years ago, he had some sort of power, I don't know, in the army or something. But he opens the parliament, and, you know, every year. That's about what all he does, and just ceremonial duties.
And they, you know, they were joking. I told you they were joking. And there was also somebody from Norway when I was in Peru, and they were all joking with each other about how they had taken over each other's lands at different point, except for the Norwegians, which seemed to always get the short end of the stick.
Yeah, yeah. Just bounced around between Sweden and Denmark.
That was crazy times, crazy, crazy Norskis.
Yep.
So, back to the hedgehog. When you talked about the hedgehog going out of his way to say he was a peaceful hedgehog, did you relate to that also because you consider yourself a pacifist? And if I'm incorrect in my term, feel free to correct me.
Sure. I don't know. I consider myself friendly. Yeah.
Friendly but snarky?
Yeah.
So, see, now I really want to read this book because I want to find out more about what makes you tick, and if you relate to this hedgehog, I want to know more about it.
I don't know if you should go too deep into it. I did read it as a kid, so.
So
shape my personality.
Yeah, right. So, clarify your pacifist beliefs. Do you believe that just war is antiquated, or do you believe it's unnecessary, or both?
Well, I don't know.
I know that's kind of a tough question, but
yeah, I believe it's antiquated. We should move on from that. We should have gotten further. I think we get stuck if we consider violence a solution to anything. Just need to find different ways to deal with things.
Yeah, I think that's true too. You know, and you know, I was obviously in the military, but I've always felt that that was true. You know, if you just look at how warfare is fought, you know, technologically, we keep trying to find ways to make ourselves safer and end battles quicker. And so just like purely from a logical sense, if we're trying to end battles quicker and we're trying to preserve at least one side of life, and then you even see, you know, war crimes tribunals for crimes against humanity and things like that. Clearly, humanity's trying to move to the least lethal way to conduct war now. So eventually, it must get to a place where war is completely non-lethal in one way or another. I think that seems logical, don't you?
Yeah. Not sure. I feel entirely comforted by that. If there's still hostility and they're still fighting at some level, and you breed frustration and people, you know, lashing out in violent ways if they feel alienated and oppressed. So have to find peaceful solutions. Get everyone included.
Yeah, well, I think, honestly, I think that the eventual cure for everything will be the internet, or at least the internet will be the mother of whatever is born from it. Because clearly, nowadays, information has become more powerful than land. And you can see that happening everywhere. You see, like, the oppression of the internet in some countries that really try hard to censor it. You know, Turkey just cut off YouTube, and China obviously is as good as they possibly can be at blocking anti-nationalist things. But eventually, the internet's always going to win. And, you know, I think governments see that as a threat, and that's why cyber warfare is by far and away the most quickly emerging form of warfare, where people are doing things from command centers, you know, where they don't have to send things different places. You can shut down somebody's guidance system or defense systems with a virus now. You don't need to go bomb them.
Which is fairly scary.
It is. It is, because, I mean, you know, I kind of have joked about this before that, you know, and I'm going to step into dangerous waters here and quote the Bible, but when it says the meek shall inherit the earth, you really look at what's happening and the power of information and the spread of information through the internet and other things has allowed the meek and the individual to be much more powerful than it ever was before. I mean, you even look at like media, where before there was three news stations and everything we knew about the world happened either there or in the daily newspaper. And it's not like that anymore. People are getting their information from a million different places. So I think there's a pessimistic way to look at it, that you know, a nut job sitting in his chair could launch missiles from his iPad, which, you know, I know I'm being a little bit hyperbolic there, but, or, you know, the spread of information is akin to what happened when the printing press was invented times 100 million.
Yeah, well, it's good and bad, I guess.
I don't know. I think I always try and look at the positive there, because there's certainly no changing it. I don't know if you heard about this quantum computer that is getting very close to operation in Canada. Have you heard anything about it?
Nope.
There's this quantum computer that supposedly, based on how it computes, and I don't pretend to know shit about it. I'm a moron when it comes to this stuff. But what it basically comes down to is, you know, it supersedes Moore's law, and it will have the computing power of every atom in the entire universe. But it thinks, you know, it works irrationally, obviously, and it works through quantum entanglement somehow. Now, I'm going to border on getting into pseudoscience, so I'm not going to say any more. But it, you know, it's being sponsored by, you know, guys like Jeff Bezos from Amazon. I mean, it has some big money behind it. So you talk about scary. This thing could recreate the entire universe, basically.
That's exciting.
Yeah. So who knows? Maybe we are really just living in one big simulation, and we're all just zeros and ones. Or maybe we're G, A, T, and C, and going through some DNA Gattaca strain simulation of life. I lost everybody listening, including you just now, didn't I?
I have no idea.
Just talking nonsense and shit. All right, let's bring it back. Let's get it back on track here. So we were talking about Florida with the because your wife and her family is from Florida via Connecticut, right?
Yep.
So you try and make a trip back, what, once every other year?
Yeah, about that.
Something like that. And where did she live in Florida?
In Palm Beach, in Jupiter.
Is your wife 70? I've been to Jupiter, Florida. I've never seen anybody under 50 there. It's like a gang. They kick you out if you're under 50.
Yeah, it's true.
It's a nice place, but damn, it is brutally hot in the summer.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's I don't really do well with heat at all. So it's not my ideal place.
So she's never going to talk you into moving there at some point?
No, but I think I've been more open to it than she is. She was happy to get out.
Oh, really? See, this is a unique thing. You know, most people will never become a resident of another country and live there full time. And so I want to dig into that a little bit, if you don't mind. Where did you guys meet?
On the internet and IRC chat.
Oh, yeah, IRC. I used to chat on there before there's much else going on the internet. There's a IIRC channel for pretty much everything back then.
Yeah.
A lot of people met through games. Did you meet her through a game?
Oh, no, just hanging out, socially chatting, and started talking.
And so you're talking to her, and at some point you have to say, all right, I'd like to meet you, but it's kind of a 2,000-mile trip.
Yeah. Well, we had been talking for a couple of years or something by then. So
you were already in love without even meeting her.
Yep.
That's awesome. So the first trip, did you come over here?
Yeah. And I spent 3 months in the summer. So.
Wow. Yeah. And then you guys just decided this is it at that point?
Well, no, I mean, pretty much, but it was a couple of years later that I actually moved here.
That had to be a big decision for her I mean, I'm sure she has dual residency, but I mean, to actually pack up and move that far away from not just your family, but literally everything that you know. I mean, Sweden's, I'm sure, a wonderful place, and everything I know about it, a lot of nice people, but it's brand new culture. I mean, that had to be kind of a shock for her.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it took a while to adjust.
And do you have any kids?
No.
Now, I was going to say, I didn't think that you did. And then are your parents close?
Yeah.
So
Yeah,
you
they're.
have some family there?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So did you always live in Stockholm?
Yes.
And
Yeah, I'm from a suburb here and just moved a little bit closer into the city from there.
pretty much the vast majority of the population of Sweden lives on that southern bank, right?
Yeah. I don't know if you would call it a southern bank. This is sort of in the middle, and then there's the south.
I should have said probably like the south quarter of the country.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, the north is kind of empty.
Yeah, so last time that you made a trip to the United States was 2012, correct?
That sounds about right for Christmas.
Yeah, it was Christmas, and you actually got to Wisconsin.
Was that then?
Yeah, that
No,
was.
that was the time before that. That
Oh.
was 2011, maybe,
Oh.
in the summer. Went
And
to Chicago and then.
yeah, that's right. You were it had to have been summer because you went out to the Nuglaris Brewery. And so what brought you to Chicago and to Wisconsin?
I think my wife had an internet acquaintance that we could stay at in Chicago, and we like getting to the big cities of America, and that was convenient.
Yeah, Chicago's a cool city. What did you do while you were here?
What did we do? What?
What didn't you do? Did you go up in the Sears Tower?
Yeah, we did. That was nice.
Did they have that little built-out thing that you can stand on and you're looking directly down the 96 stories or whatever it is?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Oh man, that is crazy, isn't it? I mean, the pic doing seeing the pictures don't do that justice.
That was crazy. It's an experience. Yeah, and we went to see the Cubs play the Marlins.
Nice.
So, nice timing.
Was
That's
that just coincidental timing?
yeah, it was.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. That was good, and that's a great park, I say.
Yeah. And you know that how they built it up around Wrigley is really cool with Wrigleyville and all the bars and restaurants around there. It didn't used to be like that. It used to be a little bit more run down, and now it's a really cool place to hang out.
Yeah, we walked around a lot around there. It's really exciting. Real American city feels like.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the, if somebody was to come here from another country, that Chicago's like the truest American city. And the reason being is you go to New York and everybody you meet is from another country. I mean, it is truly an international city in New York. And LA is fake. I mean, it's just not a true America is a place like Chicago, maybe even a place like Boston, but that's still pretty far East Coast. I think Chicago's a good representation, both good and bad, of what the United States is.
Yeah, I have not been to Boston. I was in New York in 93. That's the last time I was there, and so I don't know how it changed since then. I guess that's kind of a while ago. But otherwise, we've visited San Francisco and Seattle a couple of times, and those feel very different. Lots of much more of a European flavor.
Yeah, especially San Francisco, right?
Yeah. Great city.
Yeah, there's a lot of great cities in the United States. You know, my two favorite are San Diego and Denver. So if you ever get a chance to visit either of those cities, they're just the nicest, most accommodating, a ton to do, beautiful, naturally cities that you'll find in America, in my opinion.
Have to check it out sometime.
So, but where I was leading with this trip is I missed one of the greatest opportunities in my CSFBL life, because, you know, I prided myself on trying to meet as many people in person as I can. I think I've probably met the most people in person. And I had a chance to meet you, and I don't remember exactly what was happening at work. I worked at the Sheraton at the time, and I didn't make the 45-minute drive to come meet you, and I don't remember why, but I'm sorry I missed you.
Yeah, that's a shame. I think you got the dates mixed up. Thought it was a different week.
Yeah, maybe. I don't really remember. I don't know. But it must have been pretty darn important, whatever I missed it for, because you were going to not only a brewery, but you were going to one of the greatest, or the brewery with one of the greatest beers, in my opinion, in America, with Spotted Cow.
Yeah, that was enjoyable.
Yeah, Spotted Cow, the interesting thing, and I'm sure they told you on the tour, but they refuse to sell it outside of Wisconsin, so you can't get it across the country, even though people clamor for it, and that's bred this weird market where, like, people come into the hotel all the time and buy a couple cases of Spotted Cow and take it with them, so much so that the liquor stores in downtown Madison sell Spotted Cow by the case more than they sell any other beer, including Miller Lite, Bud Light, all the common beers.
That makes sense, but it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. So overall, you know, I think you kind of have a unique perspective, and I know you make fun of Americans and our stupid warmongering and things like that, but I think secretly you really like Americans or America as well. What is your opinion of Americans in general, not America?
Nice and open people, easy to talk to, friendly mostly.
So what do you think's wrong with our country? I just loaded that one up for you. You say whatever you want.
there's a lot. I don't know. I have no idea how to answer a question like that.
Well, I mean, I think you think that, and I don't. I'm not setting you up here, because I think it is a widely held belief that we're kind of a warmongering culture, maybe a little power obsessed, that type of thing.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of just images that people have of what they are, and that maybe it's not quite accurate, and their place in the world, and kind of buying a certain image from certain media, maybe, and it's not necessarily positive.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that America is the TCL of countries? Where we're kind of elitist, we kind of think we're better than everybody, but really we're just a bunch of assholes.
Everybody.
I think that might work.
Yeah, it kind of does. Sure.
So, one thing that is undeniable about America, though, that is good, is we are the kings of media, and you are the king of movies. So you have to love America in that sense.
Well, yes and no.
We're probably
There's,
not putting out the best movies anymore, though. We used to.
yeah, it's become a little bit too much of an industry, and I guess that's part of the problem too. Everything is supposed to be monetized, and making money is the greatest achievement, and that kind of hurts the movie industry as well.
I think you might have just hit the biggest problem with America is capitalism gone wild?
Yeah.
The because I know exactly what you're saying. You look at like the movie industry, and I'll just use that since we're talking about it as a microcosm of America, and they're so focused on making blockbusters that when you go to like a film festival, the vast majority of movies in the movie theater are from America, even across the world, but the vast majority of critically acclaimed movies at a film festival will not be American.
Yeah, which is it's a shame. It's changed a lot over the past 15 years or so. In the 90s, there were the American independents were just awesome, but these days they don't really make that much great stuff.
Is that just because of the need to make money?
Yeah, I think people like Steven Soderbergh has discussed in great length about the problem with the American movie industry, that there's you have to spend so much time marketing that it's not really worth it if you're on a budget smaller than $100 million or so, so you can't make a mid-sized $60 million movie, which is a lot of money, but it's what good movies where those are about.
You can't even
So either
go ahead.
that you make really cheap little crappy indies, or you make a blockbuster for a couple $100 million that make $1 billion back.
Right. Yeah, around here you can't even run for Congress anymore without $100 million. So, speaking
And
of, oh, go ahead.
another problem with the blockbusters is that these days they also want to get into China and get all of that money. And so you don't want to offend anyone in America or anyone in China, and you just want to get as many people as possible to get in the theater. And if you don't want to offend anyone, then it's not going to be very interesting.
Yeah, China's a crazy thing right now. Almost every industry is trying to get into China just because their economy is now the largest in the world, and they have this burgeoning middle class that's flush with discretionary income, and they obviously have billions of people. So pretty much everything is made around what taking the Chinese into consideration now, even like in the hotel industry. Hilton, Starwood, all the big companies, they have a Chinese guest program. So like we have rice cookers, slippers. We have this whole package of stuff when we have Chinese guests come in that we recreate in the rooms to make them more comfortable. And that's because, Hilton, Starwood, these companies have billions of dollars on the line, and so they take it all the way back to small little Madison, Wisconsin, to make sure that they're making their Chinese guests as comfortable as possible. And it's like that with, movies, manufacturing, and everything else.
Yeah.
So you every year go to the Stockholm Film Festival, right? So tell me a little bit more about that. Is that one of the bigger film festivals? in Europe?
Not one of the big ones, but it's fairly big. It's part of some sort of association that hands out prizes, awards on some European level. So it's fairly big. Get good movies. It has a nice focus on Asian and Latin American movies as well.
So. Oh, nice. And when is it every year?
In November.
Okay.
Which is a nice time, nice to look forward to November, because otherwise it's just rainy and dark. Everyone hates it.
Well, and the Cannes Film Festival just happened, right?
It's going on right now, right?
It's going on right now, yeah. I knew it had just started. That's what, Southern France?
Yeah.
Right. Is that a dream of yours to go to that? Or is that kind of played out now? It seems like it's kind of overdone at this point.
I think it's just for people in the industry, just journalists and such. It's not really for the public. And I'm not too interested in going to other festivals. I'm happy with the one we have here. It really satisfies me. I might be a little bit interested to go to Toronto sometime, maybe. That seems to be pretty open to the public as well, but to get some big movies ahead of time.
But, yeah, Canada's doing it right. They have the Toronto Film Festival is one of the biggest. Montreal has the largest comedy festival. The Montreal Comedy Festival is like second to none. That's my dream, is to go to that. And they have a quantum computer. What else do you need?
Right.
They're nailing it. The Canadians got it figured out, and they are the nicest people on earth.
Right.
Except for Scrub, who's nice now. He didn't used to be nice. Now he's nice.
He used to be decent. He just had a little temporary insanity somewhere.
Yeah, he lost it for a little while there. I think he's all right now. Speaking of Scrub. You know, I was looking at your leagues, and you were in a league at one point, and I think it was Justice, where it was you, Scrub, D-Man, and Realmwalker all in the same league.
Was Scrub there? I don't remember that. I wouldn't.
Or was that Moneyball? He was in one of your leagues.
It was in League of Legends. He was kind of running the stats like Croco. Yeah. For League of Legends when I first joined there.
Yeah, so you've obviously been around a long time, longer than me. I guess I didn't realize you were around that long. So when did CSFBL actually go online? Was it 2003?
No, it was around before that. I don't know.
Because correct me if I'm wrong, but Brian did Weeble, right? The boxing league?
I have no idea.
I think so. I think that was the very first online sim I ever played, was WEBL, and I think that's where that league came from. I don't think that's around anymore either, but it was a simulated boxing league. Or maybe just players from that came over. I guess I don't know. But that's how I found out about CSFBL and ended up coming over. How did you find out about CSFBL?
A friend here started playing it. I don't know how he heard about it, but we were both interested in American sports, and so he thought I would be interested in it.
He doesn't play anymore, I take it?
No, but he was around for a long time. His name was Berserkers.
Oh, yeah, so. Yeah. I was in a league with him a long time ago. Is he still around? Do you still keep in contact with him?
Well, not so much. We sort of, once a year, we kind of message each other on Facebook and say we should meet, talk, but never do.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's around somewhere here.
It gets to that point in life where life just, gets real busy and people have family commitments and things like that where you want to meet up, and it just makes it tough to coordinate everybody's schedule.
Yep.
How old of a guy are you?
Same as you, I think.
I'm 38.
38.
Yeah, I'll be 39 next month. I'm still like a seven-year-old. I'm like, I'm 38 and a half. So one of the claims to fame that you had for a long time is you were like one of the only guys that we could get streaks and feeds from.
Yep.
What was that? Was that how were you doing it?
It's an application that scraped all the buck scores from the site and season by season and stored it in a little database that I could get the stats from.
Did you write it?
Yes. Berserkers originally did that, and when he quit, I took his code, and it didn't work anymore because of changes to the site, and I was looking at his code trying to fix it and realized that it would be easier to just rewrite from scratch, so I did.
So,
but it's not very well written, so... I sent it to some people who wanted to see if they could make it work for them, and I don't think anyone ever did because it's not really user-friendly. It's just kind of hacky.
What language is it written in?
Java.
So you're pretty accustomed to programming then, huh?
Well, I don't know. Compared to the guys who actually know what they're doing, I'm not, I don't know what I'm doing, but I know the basics. I can figure out the making something simple like that.
Well, it's been years and nobody was writing a better one. So I'm just going to go with that you were the best. Somebody should have wrote a better one instead. Everybody was asking you for them for every league.
Yep.
And so you must have wrote the caught stealing one separate.
No, it's just the same box score stats. Just get it from the database.
So are people, everything you did in Streaks and Feats, can that, this is a stupid question, but I just don't know the answer. Can that be accessed from the stats parser that people have now?
I'm not sure. I haven't actually used it myself, so... I'm not sure exactly what stats that gets, but probably yes.
I don't know. I'm talking over my head. Although, you know, I just know that the numbers appear sometimes and I look at them. The streaks and feats were always my favorite when they would come out, though, because, you know, just because of the way I built teams and because of my park size and just kind of how it worked out, I'd always have people show up on there for one reason or another. Usually it was something bad, but sometimes it was something good. But it was always interesting to look at like the hit streaks. The one I always looked at was consecutive games with home runs, because I'd usually like have four or five players in the top 10 of those.
Right. Yeah, I never really looked too much at the actual results. I just put it out there. I don't think that I've had very many extreme players that would actually show up in those kind of places.
Yeah, is it? Let's talk about that, because, you know, you had mentioned on the other podcast that you're more about the team and the team as a whole, so you don't have a lot of favorite players. What is, when you're building a team, what is your philosophy going in terms of the type of player you're looking for, your stadium, those type of things? How do you ideally try and do it?
Well, I try to get players that fit the stadium and that will fit nicely under the cap. So I avoid expensive players, which hasn't really worked out lately. But yeah, I very much try to get everyone to have a proper role on the team.
It's interesting, because if you look at like the teams that are perennially successful, there's lots of different ways to win. And so I don't know. Did you listen to the podcast with Schnug on it?
Yeah.
He was trying to say that there's really only one way to win, which the more, after I listened to the podcast back, I totally disagree with that because, you know, I'm not saying by any means that TCL is the best league, but I think it's fair to say that it has a lot of the most experienced owners, so at least the competitiveness level is very high. And when you look at the teams that consistently win, you know, you have a guy that has a big park with all rangy guys and everything else be damned, and you have a guy that, like Rent, that focuses on having two monster pitchers and one big hitter, and that everything else just kind of has to fit in. And I know I'm oversimplifying his strategy. And you have, you know, another guy that is really good at trading and gets everybody the same ages and, you know, just takes several runs at it. You have the tank and bank strategy. You have a lot of different strategies, and there's lots of people that win consistently.
Yeah. I think it was easier to use sort of different strategies in the past. It's hard to get by without some sort of monster ace these days, but that might just be because there happen to be some real monsters in the league at the moment. But
yeah, well, I don't think that's ever changed in real baseball or CSFBL. I think you have to have a real high level ace. That's why I traded so much for Luther Robeson, why I traded so much for like Howard Canode or Dijon or Ernest Shumway way back in the day. You know, you got to have somebody at the top of that rotation that's just going to crush people. Patrick Gray, guys like that.
Yeah. It used to be less so, I think, back when there was more normalization. So that the extremes weren't so extreme. but yeah, it makes it, you know, if you happen to have a high draft pick when those guys come around, then you're going to be guaranteed success for a long while, which, yeah, it's a little bit of a shame.
So you're kind of dipping your toe into saying that tanking is effective.
You know, like Wolf says, you have to time it right.
Yeah.
The way I've been doing, you know, I get my number ones at the wrong time and just get crap players and miss out on the aces.
Yeah. Anytime I look at a draft and a pitcher's not the number one pick, you lost. You know, you were just in the wrong draft. If you got the number one pick, and I'm not even talking about tanking, but talking about the timing. If you get the number one pick and you have to take a right fielder like you did last year, and it was the right pick, but too bad you know, because unless you get that monster ace, you're not going to make it. You're going to have to trade for him.
Yeah, so I guess a good owner would trade that pick for something in the future and hope for a new high pick next year.
Yeah. So in terms of your team, in TCL specifically, just because that's the one I'm most familiar with, you had you've had a couple runs. You know, you had the run right after you took over the team where I think you won two World Series, right?
Yep.
And then you had another run where I don't think you won a World Series, but you were always right there with those pitchers I was mentioning before. You had Bennett and Morgan, and I think Hess was on your team then. You had a good group.
Yeah, it was great. I had it was a kind of a fun team because I didn't have the biggest hitters on the team, but I had the little speedy catcher, Chester Baxter, was great leadoff, and Russell Bohorquez, a DH, that had a great batting average, just racking up the RBIs, and I had solid defense and some of those big pitchers, and I think I made the I think I won the DCS like 5 or 6 times in the 40s, and I did not make it out of the LCS once.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You won the DCS in 2040, 2041, 2042, 2045, 2048. That was a hell of a run. You had a 9-year run there and didn't win the LCS any of the times. Who are you running up against then that kept bouncing you?
Jelly a couple of times, maybe. I'm sure Joke was there sometime. I'm not sure, but it was slightly frustrating. But also, I was, like I've said, I haven't really been prepared to do what it takes to actually be successful. I haven't really put in the effort.
You don't put in the effort? What do you mean by that? It seems like you're pretty active.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not spreadsheeting and not working the trades as much as maybe I have in the past. And I build a decent team and run with it.
Is that just the nature of how you manage, or are you saying that your interest in the game is waning?
Yeah, I'm not quite as excited about the game as I used to be. But I don't know, less competitive.
Why the change?
I have no idea. I've had decent success all over the place, and just there to, you know, hang out on the forums.
Yeah, you know, we talk about that balance too. You know, it's, for me, it's been more about the community than success in the game. But that said, like, I always want to do well in the game. I always want to try hard but that ebbs and flows too. I have a busy life, and sometimes, you know, the game is just not the primary part. And, you know, in the old days, I'd spend from, you know, 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. on AIM talking to people, you know, all night trying to work deals and stuff like that. And that's what preceded my World Series in 2005, 6, 7, going there in 8 and 9, because I was working it really hard. And so I can appreciate that. I don't do that anymore. And boy, you know, I've had some playoff teams, but no rings.
Yeah. I'm not saying that I would get rings if I tried harder, but there are some smart guys there and competitive, but yeah, I'm not too concerned with it.
So that kind of brings me to a topic that I wanted to ask you about. And I'm sure you probably realize that in the entire history of TCL, you're the only owner that's ever been handpicked.
Yeah, that's kind of flattering.
Yeah.
I have no idea why. I hope Clone's not too displeased with it. At least I got those two first rings for him.
Well, yeah, I think that was the most important thing is you didn't let the team that he worked so hard to go to waste. You made a couple of changes of your own, and then brought home 2 titles in 3 years, I think, if I remember correctly, right?
Yep. Well, it was the first 2 years.
It was the first 2 years, 2015 and 16.
Yep.
I think it was.
And I like to think that he wouldn't have done it himself. I think he would have dismantled a little bit and retooled and maybe won 5 straight after that, but I don't think he would have won those 2.
Well, maybe, because he didn't win it in the year that he left was 2014, and he didn't even win the DCS that year. And then you took over and won 2 World Series. So, yeah, you did it. Clone couldn't. It's on record now.
Yeah. That was a ridiculous team, though. I have no idea how he put that together.
Doing exactly what I talked about. I mean, that guy was relentless at team building. He was talking to people all the time, and he never, you know, really screwed anybody in a trade. It was just that he was making enough of them that over time he just built up a lot of things to trade. And so when he was going for, you know, those big names, he was able to get them.
Yeah. So, I still don't understand it.
So when you took over the team, I have to ask you about this because I want to take a little bit of credit for it. You picked the name Effingham. Was that because of my post?
Yes, absolutely.
That's awesome. Because I remember exactly when it happened. I was working in, I must have been working in Iowa at the time, because I was driving back to Wisconsin. I passed a city called Effingham, and I was thinking about it on the way, like, just like, oh, here comes fucking Piggy. And I was like, Effingham, it's just a beautiful name for your team. So I'm honored that you would take my advice.
Yeah, I was kind of freaked out right at the start there. Yeah, you being you kind of picked on me when I was new. And I had no prior experience. So I thought you were kind of serious and unhappy with the clone's choice. So.
Now you know I'm just a harmless jerk.
Yep.
I used to be, it's funny you bring that up, because forget who else mentioned that to me, but I think, you know, that's just, it comes through wrong on the forums, just because you can't see facial expression or body language, or, you know, you just don't have that personal relationship. But that's so, like, the opposite of who I am. I'm not a bully, a cyber bully or whatever. I just really tried to, you know, have that locker room mentality. So I'm sorry if it came across like I was kind of just a dick, because I'm really not.
Yeah, I brought it up with Clone, I think, and he said, don't worry. It's just the way it is. And I appreciate that kind of mentality.
Yeah, you know, I think you actually said the same thing when I was talking about you being snarky, and I think I was actually kind of annoyed for whatever reason. I was like, why do you have to be so snarky all the time? And your comment was, well, I guess I don't know how that's coming across, but that's, you know, I am being snarky, but in a playful way, not in a, you know, I'm better than you way.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I hope people get to know me enough to know how to read it. So,
yeah, I think whatever that was about, I think kind of changed my opinion of it, because, and I tried to find the thread last night. I wasn't able to find it, because when you type in Piggy Snark into the search engine, about 50 threads come up. But, I try to find the thread where we were talking about, because since then, it's just become kind of a fun thing where, you know, we call you Snarkopotamus or Snarknado, or, you know, and we just have fun with you and let you be the hedgehog.
Yeah, and I'm aware that it's not going to work for some people, and that's a shame.
Do you think that some people still take you too seriously?
Probably.
Anybody in particular?
No.
Sometimes Reds takes things wrong.
Yeah, but, you know, I have no idea how he works, really.
Yeah, he's a interesting guy, you know. I mean, you can't fault his passion. You know, sometimes his Reds rage is a little misguided and a little over the top. But you know, just like we were talking, it doesn't come out of a place of true negativity. It just comes out of his own Reds place.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, just along those same lines, do you kind of consider yourself the in-house devil's advocate for TCL, or for just in general?
I think that's often a role that I have. I will happily argue positions that I don't fully believe in, just to, you know, get some discussion.
But you're not trying to be a contrarian necessarily. You're just trying to show the other side of things only if you believe in whatever it is.
Well, it's always nice to have a little bit of a balance to end a discussion. Get all sides. There are few situations that one side is all correct. So there's always something to bring up.
So that sounds like you are naturally a contrarian. Do you do that in your real life too?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm a Libra. So.
What does that mean? Libras are naturally contrarians? According
well,
to
yeah.
the...
Balancing between extremes and finding a balance, sure.
Oh, yeah. Libra is the scales, right?
Yep.
See, I don't know too much about astrology. Are you into astrology?
No.
Oh, you're just...
It's useful.
That would have been a great thing for me to talk to you about if you're into astrology. I would like to use that on you. But one thing that you're not into, pot.
Yeah, that's correct. Yep.
You know, it's funny. When I was talking to Schnug, I think actually after, I don't know if it was during the podcast or after, but how we were talking about how, or actually it might have been when I was talking to Tino. Tino is the next podcast that's about to come out. But the view of the people in TCL is almost like an enigma where they look at it as one group of people. And so like when Schnug was talking about seeing the TCL guys come out and talk about something, like I don't see that as an internal member of the community. I think we often make strange bedfellows, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because, you know, there's a lot of things that like you and Jelly will agree seamlessly on. And then you have the pot thing where you and Joke will agree on. But then you have something like climate change where you and Joke will be the exact opposite or whatever it is. But I don't see that at all. I see everybody as a very unique individual person. I don't see that gang mentality that sometimes I think you can see as an outsider.
Yeah, that's definitely so. We come from very different places, very different reasons for opinions, and I don't think that there's any real homogenous group there.
No, definitely not. So let's talk about the marijuana for a second, because you are pretty adamant in your absolution against marijuana. Where does that come from?
Well, I don't know. School? Dare? I used to be strongly against alcohol as well. I liked to, be in control of my mind, and I think any artificial ways to numb yourself or just not be your sharpest is terrible. It's making yourself worse than you are.
Well, I would certainly agree with that. With alcohol, you know, I saw what it did to me for a long period of time, and really nothing except for some ridiculous stories ever came from it that was good. And I look at, you know, what I've done in the past year, and I've been, I've been wildly more productive in my life in this year than the previous 20 combined. And that's not, you know, that's just not hyperbole. I mean, that's true. And so I can appreciate that, what you're saying, and certainly, you know, a lot of drugs have that same type of thing. I don't see that as much from marijuana as I do other things. So for you, is it just anti-drug, and marijuana just happens to fall into that along with alcohol and everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe my part Dutch heritage comes through as well. They've been very lenient on it, and every time I've been to Amsterdam, it's just it's miserable to see the people there. They've reconsidered their drug tourism.
Yeah, I mean, drug tourism, I think, is always going to turn into a shit show. I mean, it's just, you're setting yourself up for, the people that are showing up are, just as degenerate as anything, right? I mean, that's the problem, is they went too far with it, and they also legalized prostitution and other things too, right? All together.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've never been to Amsterdam. When you say, how bad it is there, what do you mean?
Oh, it's the red light district is just awful. Junkies lying around in the fountains and have their little coffee shops with creepy people everywhere.
Are all drugs legal there, or just marijuana?
No, yeah.
So the junkies, they're on illegal drugs, obviously.
Possibly. I don't know. I was mostly there when I was a kid. Made an impression.
Yeah.
All the same to me.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because they just legalized it in the United States in a couple places on a limited basis, but the most liberal laws are in Colorado and Denver. They're having this explosion of marijuana freedom there. And I really hope it doesn't turn into what you're describing. Right now, it seems pretty positive and productive, and they're at least making it out to that everybody's winning. I don't know that for sure because I haven't been there, but it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, and hopefully they can avoid some of the problems that Amsterdam has had.
Yeah, I sort of assume that they will regret their choice eventually. But
yeah, it'll be interesting. So, I guess the reason I'm hesitating, isn't marijuana legal in Sweden?
No, not at all. Very, very strong opposition to drugs here.
Oh, all right. And then is alcohol just as legal as it is in the United States?
Not as legal. It's sort of controlled. We have special liquor stores. You can't buy wine and such in normal grocery stores. So it's a special government-owned liquor stores where you buy anything stronger than beer.
Doesn't that seem kind of ridiculous that the government is the one providing the drug? I mean, they're the ones profiting from it, right?
Yeah, it's problematic. It's ridiculous because they are forced to have ads saying you shouldn't drink, and then they sell it.
Yeah, it's naturally hypocritical, but if it went away, they would have to replace that income, that revenue, with something. So their incentive is to not have people quit drinking secretly, right?
Well, there's a cost to drinking in other parts of the government, so hopefully they see the big picture and realize that it's not just money in, it's money out as well, and the healthcare and the police. It is sort of a pragmatic way to control drinking. If it was easier to get it, then people would drink more. So it may seem hypocritical that they provide it and profit from it, but it's still a way to control it. keep it down somewhat. We do have a history, you know, 100 years ago when people would get paid in liquor instead of money and just be drunks. It cost a lot of problems.
Yeah, that's interesting. My old boss, he was from Scotland, and I'm not sure if this story makes any sense based on what we were talking about, but you just said, you know, getting paid in liquor, and he used to own a restaurant in Scotland, and everybody would pay him for alcohol in fish. They would just bring fish in, and he would make that the menu for the night, and, you know, all the fishermen would drink for free. And he said it would get pretty ugly in there because, you know, everybody would be drunk eating their own fish. It's a ridiculous story. I don't even know why I brought it up. So anyways, so we're getting past the hour 10 point. So let's talk about a couple other things real quick, and then we'll start to wrap it up. But I saw, were you at a Drake concert recently?
Yes, I was.
So I was looking at this, and I looked at your Facebook real quick before we started. I mean, you're getting some big names. Is it at the Globin?
Yeah, right.
Is that a stadium?
It's originally a hockey stadium. It's a big white ball. It's an exciting stadium. Bad acoustics, but yeah.
Well, you had Drake there, and then Lil Wayne was there.
Yep.
Are you a hip-hop fan?
Sort of, yeah, sure.
Or if just big concerts come, you go?
No, I enjoy them.
Yeah. Yeah, it looked pretty cool. So the last thing I wanted to ask you about, and I already touched on it a little bit, was... I thought Scrub was there, but in CSFBL Justice, it looked like an interesting dynamic there with the owners way back in the day, like in the 2005 and 6 years.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, and you were kind of a Mod and Moneyball. I don't know if you were back then, but you have any interesting stories from back in the day with Realm Walker and... He wasn't even D-Man back then. He was still Don Armstrong back then.
Yeah. Oh, that was exciting times. For a little period there, I was supposedly the commissioner of justice with D-Man and Realm Walker as assistant commissioners. And
were
yeah,
you just the referee in the boxing ring for that?
Yeah, pretty much. And, they would just, you know, go ahead, do things the way they did, and I would try to clean up a little bit. And I'm not really a good commissioner anyway, so that was just a disaster.
Why aren't you a good commissioner?
I don't know. There's I'm kind of open in my criticism of people and what they do, and some people don't enjoy that much. Rub enough people the wrong way to be a good and fair commissioner.
See, talking to you seem pretty soft-spoken, though. Is it just a online thing that your personality is able to come out a little bit more assertively?
Yeah, probably. I'm in my professional work, my diplomatic skills are appreciated, but also my honesty, that I will not just, you know, hold back. So on the forums, I think it works for those that know me and respect that, but then, you know, it rubs some people the wrong way.
I read one thread, and unfortunately, my iPod shut down on me, so I don't have it in front of me. But that really made me laugh, and it was it was a thread from 2005, and it was from Justice when D-Man had made a trade with somebody, and it was really lopsided, and he was a commissioner, and Realm Walker called him out on it. I don't know if you remember it or not, but it was probably one of many times that Don threatened to quit and take the league with him, and it was funny because you kind of got in the middle of it, and you weren't talking about the trade at all. You were basically doing one of the, all right, you go to that corner, you guys think about what you did type things. I'm sure that happened often in Justice.
Yeah, because, you know, Realm Walker, he was a slimy person.
He was.
He somehow got in the little group with Brian and everyone, and I think he had little interest in actually helping the game. He was more interested in, you know, learning the inner workings of the algorithms and to use it to his benefit. And he was always making sneaky trades, and then D-Man was being D-Man, and he always had his crazy workings. My first interactions with D-Man was actually in ETA Alpha when he was there before we started Justice, and I called him out on a super lopsided trade there, and after a while he claimed that it was his son that was the other team and that they didn't know what they were doing. And
his son. So, man, he's used everybody in his family at some point.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's good. So, yeah. So nobody knew it was his son before, but then all of a sudden his son popped up and owned a team, and he had just made a trade with him.
Yep. And then, you know, yeah, that was a public league, so no one really knew what the rules were there, but in the beginning of Justice, it kind of crept into there, and I think that was my first impression of Don, and kind of stayed that way, even though I tried to help him be a useful member of the leagues and try to calm him down, but he's always doing his thing.
I have tried actively to get D-Man to do this podcast, but every way I've tried to contact him, he's not responding. So I don't know if he's gone off the grid or what, but there's just too much to talk about with him. Everything from, like, the story you just told me, the funny thing is every time I talk to somebody, they tell me a new story that I hadn't heard that's even more ridiculous. So yeah. I got to talk to this guy. I'm one of those people that, like, really unique people like him intrigue me. So I want to learn more about them and find out how they work. And so, like, you know, when I really wanted to get Schnug on the podcast, he was really nice to just do it. But D-Man, boy, man, if you're listening, please come on. I'll treat you fair, but I got to hear some stories. I'll try and get Realm Walker too. I said on the, one of the podcasts, anybody that could get D-Man and Scrub and Tino all to hate you at the same time, you gotta suck. And Realm Walker got all three of those guys to hate him simultaneously.
Yeah, he was a nice guy though.
Was he?
Well, you know, when you talked to him, he was nice and friendly, and we tried to figure out a lot about the game and talked a lot about, you know, try to understand things before he really got on the inside.
Well, that's good that you said that, because I never really had any dealings with him personally, and so I've only heard the negative things. So it's good that somebody gives him at least a slight nod of recognition.
Yeah, I guess we sort of had a falling out towards the end when like you said, I was a co-commissioner in Moneyball, and he was the commissioner, and we had very strict rules on every level, and I wanted to enforce them, and he didn't, and then that didn't really work out so well.
And you're still around, and he's gone, right? He doesn't have any leagues anymore, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. I guess he won.
Yeah, that's right. Nice. All right, well, we are getting to the point of the podcast where it's about time to wrap it up, but I always want to give you the opportunity to say anything you want or promote something or yell at somebody or say hi to your mom or whatever you may want to do. You got anything for us?
I don't think my mom's listening to this. Nah, I'm just, enjoying this, being on here, and I enjoy most of the league. I hope that most people like having me there.
I think everybody does. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that was one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on, is because one thing that I've found, and it actually started with the second podcast because PR had made mention of it, that being on the podcast and having, you know, a different medium to communicate where you're actually hearing somebody's voice, I think it communicates a little bit better and people have a better understanding of you. And so I have no doubt this will be the same. So thank you very much for taking the time. You know, we're 7 hours different, so working out of time was much appreciated. That worked for both of us, so thanks for doing that, and thanks for being the guest on the other podcast. We'll see if that's a flop or if I'm on the right track or what, but it starts with you, so thanks for being our leadoff hitter for that.
Well, it's awesome that you're doing these things. It's most enjoyable. I love listening to podcasts, and not just movie podcasts now.
Yeah. And actually, that is one thing I forgot to ask you about. Were you on did you host a podcast at some point?
No, never, ever. I have some new friends that do, and I'm writing a little bit for them on their blogs.
Yeah, I don't remember how I stumbled on it, but I stumbled on your name, and then I clicked on it, and it looked like it was written in Swedish, but it looked like a landing page for a podcast site because it was like a picture of three guys around a microphone.
Yep.
And I was like, what is going on here? And then I thought maybe you were doing a podcast.
Nah, I'm writing some reviews for them.
Cool. Yep. Cool. Well, thanks again. And if you like listening to podcasts, there's the one coming out hopefully tonight if I'm brave enough to sing the song I want to do for Tino. Tino's will be up tonight, so I'm really excited about that. Another guy that was nice enough to come on, that him and I obviously had some history back in the day, so he was cool enough to come on. He was a good guest.
Yeah, like Tino.
Yeah, he's a good guy. All right, well, that's all I have. Anything else before we let you go?
No, I'm good. Maybe for the next time you bring me on, we'll have more to say.
We'll have Piggy Podcast number 2. You can be the first repeat guest. All right, awesome. Everybody. Thanks so much, and we are out of here.
I flunked typing class in high school.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
A warm glass of shut the fuck up. Oh yeah, ladies and gentlemen. What you just heard was the sweet, soulful sounds of the bearded wonder from the East himself. That man was Piggy, and he was just straight dishing like the sweetest Swedish chef that he is. Oh yeah, I don't know what goes on over there in Sweden, but he is beautiful. His voice just makes you want to cuddle up next to his beard and spoon it all night long. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we are out.